Welcome to the Painting Lines Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things tennis. Join Eric and Aiden in their discussion for updates on news and pop culture, and from hot takes to betting, they've got you covered.
Ready? Welcome back to Painting Lines. This week we are going to be recapping the Monte Carlo Open. Last week we talked about American tennis and the impact. So let's jump right in. Aiden, what was your biggest takeaway from Monte Carlo this year?
My biggest takeaway has to be the fact that Djokovic just isn't invincible. I mean, it seems like he was coming back. He had this time off sort of to rest and prep for the clay court season, whereas all these other players were playing in all these big tournaments. They were playing in the Sunshine Double. You would expect them to be a little bit more tired going into this Monte Carlo Masters tournament. And Djokovic comes in and didn't dominate in the first round, really. And then in the second round, loses to Mazzetti and just didn't look that strong. And yeah. To me, I'm just a little worried for him. I mean, hopefully this isn't a sign that he's on that decline that eventually happens to all these players, but it could be. It could be a sign of that sort of negative downward trajectory.
Yeah, I think it definitely is a negative. I was pretty disappointed that he exited pretty early, you know, not having been able to play in the Sunshine Double just due to other circumstances. So I really wanted him to come back. And, you know, he normally does well on clay. Monte Carlo is a tournament that he's done well in the past, but unfortunately he could not bring it home. He's not invincible like we saw. I think those days are maybe past him. Hopefully not, though.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll probably see what happens at the French Open. So What about you? What was your biggest takeaway?
Tennis drama is not dead. We still have a rivalry. We have the Medvedev-Zverev saga continuing. You know, that was a fantastic match. You saw three sets, tiebreaker in the end. And then a little bit of the Medvedev special, maybe what some people would call unfair, Zverev. But yeah, he took a bathroom break, which Zverev did not like. Went on to say, you know, he cheated, he wasn't playing fairly. But no, it was good to see. I think tennis kind of needed a little bit of a spice up. So that was cool. Medvedev also had a response in his press conference to Zverev, which made it very interesting.
What were your thoughts on what he said in the press conference?
Medvedev, I think he played it cool. I think he responded well. You know, he kind of reiterated what Zverev said kind of turned it on him. Like, Zverev called Medvedev unfair, and then Medvedev took it up a notch and said that he's one of the most unfair players that is on tour that he's ever seen. And I thought it was pretty funny, the other players' reactions too. Like, you saw Runa at the end of the Runa Medvedev match. He joked around with Medvedev. He goes, "Oh, you're so unfair, bro." And then Medvedev he mocked Zverev and pretended to give him one of the Zverev like salty no look handshake. So I think it's fun to see other players react to it as well.
Yeah, one of the things that I liked that Medvedev said was, he was like, "Yeah, I took the bathroom break," but then didn't really. It wasn't like he took the bathroom break and then came out and played super well immediately. Like, I'm pretty sure Zverev like won the next two games or something after that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think Zverev's kind of a drama queen to begin with, so he's always trying to find excuses. It's just funny seeing Medvedev on the other end of it and not Tsitsipas of like a bathroom break drama. Because, you know, he's always using the restroom, apparently texting his dad.
Yeah, I mean,
players accuse him of that.
He doesn't have to anymore because they have the on-court coaching. But
yeah, I know.
That'd be so bad. Like, go into the bathroom, text your dad, like, "What do I do, dad?" I do notice that it seems like these sort of next-gen players, there's a lot more sort of off-the-court drama.
Mm-hmm. I feel like they're so uptight.
Yeah, I mean, like, with Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer, the drama was all on the court, it seemed. Mm-hmm. But then now these next generation of players, they're getting mad at each other. They're like, "Oh, this guy's a dick off the court," pretty much.
Well, I think that's due to the rise of social media and just how everyone is online.
Yeah, and every comment everybody makes gets like seen by the media and other players.
Exactly. It's kind of a blessing and a curse at the same time because it gives publicity to players who otherwise may not receive it. But then again, everything you say is just being posted on the internet. There's chat boards, videos. You know, we're literally making a podcast right now about it. So I think it's fun to see this generation of content creation, but it does cause a lot more drama, which hey, I'm here for. I think tennis kind of needed it. I think it was getting a little boring, you know?
It probably needed some sort of mix up. It needed to change with the times a little bit.
Right, exactly. It was something I heard before was with the big three era, you know, tennis just became too professional. Players were too worried about their PR and what they would say in front of a crowd, because it could be taken out of context and put on the internet. Whereas back in the, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, you had on-court fits, you had people cussing at the umpires, you had people yelling at the fans. Now you don't see that because if you did, you know, it'd just be posted online on social media and reposted, commented, you know, players would essentially get canceled.
Yeah, someone could also say that was a negative of the Big Three era is that with three people dominating for that long, you don't have the new champions rising up that have grown up in a different generation. And so you have Federer winning a tournament in 2019, and when he was 20 years old, it was what, 2004? And so he grew up in a different generation than the times were at 2019. And so now we're sort of getting all these players that it's a diff you don't you aren't used to it because of how dominant the big three were. We're not used to seeing these people being at the top of the game. And so it's definitely a mix up in terms of what we're seeing.
Yeah, no, totally. So one of the biggest surprises I got from Monte Carlo was Taylor Fritz. I did not expect him to make it as far as he did, especially on a clay court, and especially how easily he beat Steph Tsitsipas. You know, he handled him. Everything Steph was throwing at him, which in his press conference, Steph was saying, you know, I don't have an easy ball to hit. You know, I have very heavy topspin, especially on the clay where it's very unpredictable, a lot of variable bounces. And Taylor Fritz was just having an answer for everything. So I think that was one of the positives. Definitely surprised, but a positive. I love to see Americans go far on red clay just because they don't really have it back home. You know, you saw that the Steph Tsitsipas and Fritz little back and forth on the red clay.
I didn't
So
see it.
yeah, so what happened was Stefanos Tsitsipas made some comment about red
Oh,
clay.
shocker, shocker. Tsitsipas made a comment about something?
Right. But get this. So Tsitsipas made a comment about red clay in the US being like a unicorn riding a skateboard, which I don't know if that's some Greek phrase that tr doesn't translate very well in the in American, but he said that and then wrote it on the camera. And then after Taylor Fritz beat Stefanos Tsitsipas, he wrote on the camera USA clay question mark question mark question mark and then signed it. So I thought that was great, another like little drama there too. And then when he was asked about it in his press conference, he kind of upheld the professionalism. He's like, yeah, you know, this was not a shot at Steph. I just thought it would be pretty funny to respond to it, which kudos to him.
Yeah. I wonder though, do you think Tsitsipas is still struggling with that injury that he was kind of talking about during Indian Wells in Miami, where he was saying, "Oh, I don't think I'm going to go far because I'm injured," and that was only a couple weeks ago.
So either that or he's already peaked, which would be a scary thought because he's not near the level that he was last year. He was winning almost every clay court tournament last year, at least the smaller ones. So,
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. I mean, you look at someone like Team. Some people could say that Team has already peaked, and he's not that old. So you could be seeing a similar thing with Tsitsipas, I guess.
Yeah, and I think part of the peaking or part of the poor performance is the fact that he's been so close so many times that it's just disheartening. And I think he's losing motivation. Like, look at Borg and McEnroe, you know, like they didn't win a slam after 25 years old. and Steph is around that age. He hasn't even won a slam, but he's been in a few major finals. And I just think it's kind of the similar thing. You know, he's getting distracted with life. He's getting older. He's so close, but not quite there yet. And then you have younger players like Alcaraz, Sinner, Runa, all coming in, and it's probably just taking a toll on him, I think.
Yeah, it's hard to stay motivated if you're if you feel like the game's getting away from you.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then I was also pretty shocked that Ruud didn't go as far as he did in the tournament, you know, especially to Struff in two sets. That's disappointing. Especially after his win in Estoril last week. He, you know, won a final there. I thought he's going to keep it going and ride high in Monte Carlo. So hopefully he can bounce back. I would love to see him do well in Barcelona.
Yeah, pretty crazy tournament. I mean, to see Tsitsipas, Ruud, and Alcaraz all go out pretty early. I mean, or not and Alcaraz, and Djokovic all go out
pretty... Alcaraz just didn't play, yeah. I see what you mean.
Yeah, I meant Djokovic. But like seeing them all go out early, it's definitely made the tournament a huge surprise. It made it very interesting to see these guys making later runs, though. I mean, I don't think anybody picked a Runa versus Rublev final.
No, I know. I sure as hell didn't.
Do you think this is sort of a sign that sort of next-gen players are moving into the spotlight, or do you think there's a different generation sort of even younger guys that are going to surpass them?
So this is a very interesting question. I do think the latter. I think you can actually separate the next gens from, you know, these new guys that are up and coming, because I feel like the next gen just kind of got skipped over. You know, they never really made a name for themselves. You have, you know, two out of the three next gen guys like Medvedev and Rublev, have won the last two out of the three Master 1000s. But I think Carlos, Sinner, Runa, those guys are going to make a big splash. I do think that the next gen is kind of getting phased out by them. What do you think?
I agree, and I think it's kind of a tough situation to see, because you have guys that really just got, I don't know if there's a nice way to put it, but they just got screwed by having to play against the big three, because their time was there and people could see that these were the best guys other than the big three, but they couldn't break through against them. And now they have exactly guys like Alcaraz, Sinner, Runa, that are, and even like someone like Shelton, who obviously isn't that at that level yet, but an up and coming guy, where they're going to be there for longer than these other guys, these next gen guys are. And it's going to be a struggle, because I think the younger you are, I think you tend to see faster improvement than these older guys. And if they're already so close in level, the younger guys are going to be more athletic. They're going to improve faster. And at a certain point, it's going to be really tough for these next gen guys that are going to be getting older. They're like 25 now. They're going to be getting up 27, 30, playing against 23-year-olds that are as good as them and more athletic.
No, I agree. Do you think that they were achieving, you know, so it's fair to say that there is a difference between the next gen and then the younger guys we have right now, right? Like, we're not grouping them together into next gen. Two totally different eras.
I think it's sort of like you see there's a big group of guys that are at the near the top that are like 24 through 28 maybe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then there's guys that are like 22 to 19.
Yeah. Because I'm just thinking of it as, I remember a couple years ago when Tennis TV and, you know, the ATP Tour, they all, you know, labeled these guys as next gen. You know, you had Zverev, Medvedev, Tsitsipas, exactly. Like, those guys were basically the spotlight, the next generation of tennis. But unfortunately, I don't really think they panned out to be the next generation.
I mean, they have won. They've won a lot of tournaments. Yes. I mean, there are guys too, like Zverev, I believe, has won the tour finals. I mean, that's no small feat, but it's just...
You don't
I think
it in slams, though.
I think that's the thing, exactly, is that the tennis world gets hyper-focused on slams, and for good reason. They're the biggest tournaments.
Right.
They're the ones where people are going to remember, oh, this guy won a slam. And because they didn't see that as much success, that group of guys in the slams, they maybe didn't pan out. But I think they still found success. They weren't... Mm. Tennis people will still know them, but mm-hmm. I think they aren't going to be have as big of a legacy if someone isn't a big tennis fan.
No, I agree. And you said the tennis world is hyper focused on slams, and in addition to that, just the common, you know, casual tennis viewer, they only watch, a lot of people only watch Grand Slams or only hear about the Grand Slams. So if you ask, you know, someone who, I don't know, went to the U.S. Open, like, hey, what did you think of Rublev's win in Monte Carlo?
I bet
most of the time, who? Rublev? Yeah. But I'm happy for him. He's a classy guy. I think he had a great victory speech. He knows how to handle himself. He has a personality, you know? Like, he's not like some of those other robotic players who you can clearly tell when they get up there, they have, like, rehearsed this at least 100 times, and they're just kind of spitting out stuff that either their coach or their parents told them to say.
Yeah, I mean, that's at least one positive about someone like Tsitsipas. At least he speaks his mind. Like, he doesn't hold back. He's like, if I think this, I'm going to say it.
Yeah,
and
no, I know.
It's great. I mean, it gives that drama and that element to sort of makes you interested in seeing his press conferences and what he has to say. So how do you think this is going to build into the rest of the clay court season and like the French Open?
I think what we saw with Rublev winning, kind of a fluke. I don't see him going very far in any of the rest of the clay court tournaments. It is a big, you know, motivating force for him going into the French Open. But I think other players that exited a little early, such as like Djokovic, Rude, those guys are the ones that are going to be coming in with a fire under their ass into the French Open. And, you know, Djokovic, like, he doesn't have many of these left. So I think he's coming different. You know, he's going to bring out that wolf mentality, and he's not going to pussyfoot around with any of these younger players anymore. At least that's what I think.
My big question is Nadal going to come back and be the same at the French? Because Djokovic, obviously, I think there was a little bit of, we kind of talked about how Djokovic could be on the decline, but I think he's going to bring a next level of energy to the French. Mm-hmm. I think even though obviously there's no like real, I'm not trying in this tournament, but I think he knows the slams. He's comfortable there. He's going to bring that fire to the tournament. And I think it's going to be tough to beat him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the French Open. I wonder if we will see a lot of these unexpected upsets though, because there are guys that are playing at peak level. I mean, Alcaraz, Sinner, these guys are playing at top level. They've been finding success in tournaments, and that can only build their confidence. So in a slam at that bigger stage, now they have more experience, not necessarily at slams, but mm-hmm. making it later into big tournaments. I think we will see those guys at the end of the tournament, and I think they will be in the top eight, top four. I don't think we're going to see as many upsets in the French Open.
I agree. I'm totally with you on that. I don't see too many upsets either, because I think the reason we saw these upsets in these Masters was they only play three sets, right? Once you get into a slam where you're playing five sets, I think that's where the older, more mature, just better players overall have the advantage, because they're able to kind of correct themselves, go down two sets to love without having lost the match. You know, like, they're able to get back into it, fix their mindset, maybe even have a little better conditioning and training, because, you know, they've been around. They've been around the game. I think they know how to handle a five-set match versus a three-setter.
I wonder if having success on the tour and being like bringing in more money impacts how you're able to play at the big tournaments, because you have to look at a guy, right? If he's number 98 in the world and isn't bringing in quite as much money, I wonder if that is an element where maybe he's not as comfortable. He can't get to the tournament as early as these other guys. He has to play in qualifiers. How much that actually impacts him playing later in these tournaments. Whereas a guy that gets there, he's the 2 seed or something and can relax a little bit more, has maybe more preferred warm-up times, better court to warm up on. Mm-hmm. How much this stuff actually caters to these guys going further? Because obviously the people organizing the French Open know that people want to see these top guys make deeper runs. People want to see Sinner play Alcaraz. They want to see Medvedev play Djokovic. And they know that people don't want to see necessarily those guys go out early. So I wonder how much them the tournament catering to these guys actually impacts how they make these deeper runs.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think a lot. I think a lot of their success is exponential. So it's kind of like a snowball rolling down a mountain, right? So the more success you have, you're just going to keep building and building and building because they set you up for it. Like you said, if you're a guy who's, you know, 98th in the world and you're coming into the French Open, you're already at a disadvantage to someone like Djokovic, who's going to be chilling in his room, you know, kicking back, practicing, gets a first round bye. And that just sets him up for even more success. But hey, I don't hate it. I don't hate that move. I think the real challenge is trying to break into that. So you don't break onto the scene in a slam. I think you do that during the season where you build up your ranking, win these smaller tournaments, and make a name for yourself, so that when you do enter these slams, you're in a better position for yourself.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's really interesting when you do see a guy make a really deep run out of nowhere in a slam. Because sometimes it happens, and you see some guy, and you're like, how did this guy just make the quarterfinals of this tournament? I've never heard of him before. Mm-hmm. It happened maybe like 2018 at the U.S. Open. There was this Korean guy. I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but he broke into the tournament and just made it to the quarters or the semis, and I'd never heard of him before. But unfortunately for him, I don't know, maybe it was a fluke because he wasn't able to turn that into further success.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree that most of the time, a guy will start to build up their progress over the course of the season, and then people notice them at the slam because they make a deeper run, but it's really coming from that sort of buildup of earlier in the season.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So let's jump into segments.
Sounds good.
All right. So what is new in tennis?
For me, the biggest thing I saw was an update on a sort of older news story. Feliciano Lopez, who's a friend of Nadal with probably a lot of insight into how he's actually doing, made a comment saying he's worried about Nadal's injury, and he made this comparison to the end of Federer's career, which is really concerning because at the end of Federer's career, fans of him know that he really struggled with injuries. He was consistently pulling out of tournaments. He tried to make multiple comebacks. He would show up to a tournament and then like lose in the first round and then all of a sudden be injured again for 3 more months and try to come back. And I really don't want to see that with Nadal. What I hope is that if he is injured and he's not going to be able to play at a high level when he comes back, I kind of just hope that he retires and doesn't try to do what Federer did, because for Federer, it wasn't nice to see at the end of his career because it was just, you knew that every attempt to come back was only making his body and his injuries worse.
Oh, yeah. You know, watching Federer at Wimbledon that last year when he was slipping all over the court was just, it's ugly to see.
Exactly.
It's like watching your grandpa get old, you know, or your dad get old, where it's just sad.
You're like looking at this guy and you're like, this guy used to be invincible and now he just isn't. Yeah,
sad.
So what about you?
I came across an interesting article over the weekend. It was labeled 80% of fans think that Medvedev was playing unfairly. So I was like, that grabs my attention. So I go in, I do a little bit more reading, and it turns out the newspaper that did the poll was in fact a German newspaper. Zverev is German. So I think this is just one of the funniest things I've seen where like, 80% of fans. Okay, 80% of what fans? Global tennis fans? No, German tennis fans. And pretty funny to see. I don't know.
Yeah, 80% of Germans think that. Do you think the question was? Do you think the German was right or the Russian was right?
Yeah,
doesn't even tell you what the situation was.
Right. I know. Yeah, but that does bring up an interesting point that I did want to hit on this podcast was, you know, we have two Russians winning out of the last four big Masters. And it is an interesting topic because we had Wimbledon actually banned Russians from playing. You know, the Russian flag is banned at all these tournaments. It just kind of, it goes to show that these players aren't playing for glory for their country, right? Like, they're doing it for themselves. I don't even think Medvedev or Rublev live in Russia anymore. But there's always going to be two sides of the camp where you have to ban Russia completely, or, you know, it's not them, it's the players. So we can get into that a little more, but I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that is tough to penalize the players for. It's clearly something that they aren't coming out and supporting. And I think because of that, it would be unfair to, like, force them out of these tournaments. I think if it was a different situation where, I think something like the Olympics, it would be a little bit more of a tough to let them in because in the Olympics, it's such a focus on this person's representing this country.
Right.
In tennis, they're all just players. They don't really, while they're maybe, you look at a match on Google and it has their flag next to their name, it's not like, oh, I'm going to go watch the U.S. play against Germany in this tennis match.
No, you're not, but you're gonna say, hey, you, an American guy is playing a German guy, me being American, I'm gonna root for the American.
Perhaps, but I think in a lot of senses, you're not really, you're not as focused on the country of the person.
Right. So yeah, it'll be interesting how this pans out if Wimbledon does let them play this summer.
I guess we'll see. I think they did say that they're going to let them back
in. They did? Okay. All right.
I'm not 100% sure, but that was what I heard.
I'm indifferent. I understand the reason for not, but I think it would be bad for tennis in general. You know, these are three actually with Khachanov too. These are three top guys, three competitors.
Yeah. I mean, what, top 10, top 11?
Yeah, top 11.
So, yeah, I think, in my opinion, it would be unfair to keep them out of these tournaments.
Speaking of Khachanov, my bet of the week, I have him -200 over Jerry. Not really going, much to say on it.
Going for a favorite here.
I'm going for a favorite. I need a win.
Yeah,
I'm going to leave it at that. Let's go.
I prefer to go for the value bets, as previous listeners might guess at this point. But yeah. I'm going for a prop bet. I'm going Karatsev wins versus Altmaier, but he wins 2-1. So it goes three sets. That's my bet. And that gives you +340 odds.
All right.
My thoughts on this are Karatsev, very high peak level. I mean, we saw him making deep runs in slams, what, last year? But he hasn't been playing quite as well recently. And so that, because of that, I think he can beat Altmaier. Altmaier's rated, I think, 94th in the world. And Karatsev is actually ranked lower than him. But I think because Karatsev has such a high level, I think he will win the match. But I think he'll struggle because he hasn't been playing at as high of a level recently.
All right. Good rationale. I may look at that. I might take that. As far as matches of the week, I'm going to refer back to Medvedev and Zverev. You know, drama aside, that was just an all-around great match too, and I love how it goes into the night, and nighttime on a red clay court just looks so great, because I feel like during the day you can't really see the ball that well, or at least I can't. I mean, I have the strongest eyes, but just a rivalry match, tons of drama, tons of great hitting. You know, Medvedev, who likes to say he's not that great on clay, whereas Zverev, clay is one of his best surfaces. So to see Medvedev go out there, give him a three setter and end up beating him was pretty good to see.
Yeah, comeback win too.
Yeah, exactly. 3-6, 7-5, 7-6.
Yeah, my match of the week was actually just the final. I mean,
the final.
I thought it was an exciting match. I mean, I think it was great to see because it was really a game of mental tennis. Because it was such a topsy-turvy match. Very close first set, and Rune gets it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, you see just Rublev come out and kind of dominate in the second set. Wins 6-2. But my mindset about it is, oh, maybe Rune was actually just coasting in that second set and letting Rublev sort of gas himself out a little bit. Because all of a sudden, Rune comes back in the third set and jumps out to a 4-1 lead. He has a break point to go up 5-1. And then somehow, Rublev battles back, takes that game, and ends up winning 7-5, doesn't even force a tiebreak.
Wow.
And gets his first Masters 1000 win on his third attempt. So I think that's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, Rublev's a fighter. You know, you always see him digging out of a match where he's down. And he's that mouse that instead of sits there and drowns in the milk.
Yeah, churns it into butter.
Churns it into butter.
That's a good reference.
Climbs out. All right, and that's the show. If you're not already subscribed, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube at Painting Lines Podcast. Feel free to shoot us a DM or email us any questions or thoughts at paintinglinespodcast@gmail.com.